everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's September 2019, and you're listening to episode 139, and it's a conversation about the Alien films of director Steven Spielberg. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Philip Tallon. He has a PhD in theology from the University of St. Andrews, and he is an assistant professor at Houston Baptist University. Phil has written an online exclusive feature article available free for you to read at our website, equip.org, and it's called Clear Skies, Hurt Hearts, Can't Lose, Why Spielberg's Aliens Help Make Us More Human. Phil, it's good to have you on.
Glad to be back.
Well, what about the idea of aliens, since we're going to be focusing specifically on Steven Spielberg's Alien films? Does it make a subject for pop culture exploration? It seems like it's just a really popular subject that people are interested in.
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely, you know, one of the, you know, big fascinations of the 20th century and, you know, and to some degree into the 21st century, though I think there's a little bit maybe less interest in aliens these days than there used to be. It's an abiding concern. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do with aliens. Aliens, you know, could be malevolent or they could be benevolent but strange in some way. And to some degree, thinking about aliens is a way of just exploring the range of possibilities for, you know, how a intelligent creature might be. So maybe their minds are similar, but their bodies or their social relations are very different. And you can kind of think through those possibilities by using aliens. Star Trek, of course, is a great example of this, you know, exploring all the different ways that things that we can have a relationship with could be quite different from us. And I think there's also a sense in which alien fascination can function almost a little bit like a form of kind of imminent transcendence, which is to say that, you know, in an age that has increasingly less religious belief, it's nice to have big, transcendent, kind of far off things to reach for, you know, that give us a sense of connection with the wider universe. And aliens, you know, have functioned as that. And so I think it's not surprising that, you know, amongst people who kind of aren't conventionally religious, that you find a lot of interest in aliens and space exploration and so forth. That, you know, it's these things fascinate Christians as well and should, but I think it provides, as it were, kind of a way of reaching beyond ourselves, but still within the natural world, as it were. So those are a few reasons why I think people like aliens so much.
Well, I'd like to have you give us a little bit of background on Steven Spielberg as a film director and why he's an important director in the history of American cinema. I think he's like in his 70s now, so I see him more like a director for the age of the baby boomers, but there's so many younger generation millennials, iGen, that they probably aren't as familiar with the work of Steven Spielberg because some of his biggest breakthrough films came out in the 70s and early 80s.
Yes, that's right. It's a little, you know, talking about Spielberg now is to some degree just an act of retrieval, which is to say that, you know, if you want people to be talking about and watch good stuff, then, you know, sometimes you have to kind of reach back into the, you know, higher up on the shelf and sort of knock the dust off of some things. And Spielberg, you know, is sort of in a way the kind of the ultimate boomer. He's that generation, and his, you know, his work really kind of kicked off the big change, sea change in Hollywood that happened during my parents' generation, basically during the boomer generation. And some of his films, though, you know, really hit, you know, at exactly the moment that Generation X, you know, was coming of age. So, you know, a film like E.T., as it were, became the film of my childhood. It was the big movie. And so, you know, for boomers or for Generation X, Spielberg's early films will be somewhat indelible. But he's had such a, you know, an incredible long-running career, you know, that people, you know, who are growing up at all different times will be, you know, familiar with his work. Certainly the, you know, Jurassic Park films, you know, for the kind of people born 10 years later would have been, you know, one of their kind of first, you know, most powerful cinematic experiences. And then he's had, you know, kind of other really big popular movies come out since then. Though his work has moved, you know, toward kind of what you might think of as more conventionally adult material. He's, you know, he's working on, you know, kind of themes that are probably going to be a bit more of interest to grown-ups perhaps, or just that are dealing with darker themes. So obviously Schindler's List kind of marks it, as it were, a transition to some degree in his career from family entertainment to films aimed more directly at adults. And then he's continued to make kind of more movies that are aimed at older audiences as he's gotten older, as is very understandable. But he still comes back and makes movies like Tintin, and he's made it up, obviously, another Indiana Jones movies and, you know, some other really kind of fun family films. And these are good films, if not quite as significant as his early ones.
I think that's so true what you're saying. I think some of the films that I want to ask you about, the Alien films, happened in an earlier part of his career, and probably the big movie that had overlap of all the generations, from boomers to Gen Xers to even millennials who were probably teenagers at the time, is Saving Private Ryan. About World War II. So it kind of reached back into some of that history, which he's done a few films regarding World War II, as you mentioned. But what he really became famous for, besides Jaws, which I think Jaws still lives on in the zeitgeist, even though, I mean, I was like a super little kid when that movie came out, but even some kids today, just the whole shark thing, they can at least recognize that. They might not know that Steven Spielberg directed Jaws back in the 70s, but what he really kind of, you know, got known for are these Alien films. And so in, you know, the late 70s and early 80s. And so how significant are these films that focused on aliens in Spielberg's filmmaking career?
Well, I think they're deeply important, and Spielberg himself has said that, you know, some of the bits of, you know, Close Encounters and E.T. are really central to his whole filmography. So there's a moment in Close Encounters where a young boy who's sort of in the process of being abducted by aliens, though it's not quite as sinister as that sounds, he's opens a door and just light, you know, beautiful orange light is just blasting through the door. It's this very small child kind of opening up this door, this incredible cinematic image. And, you know, Spielberg has said, you know, this is the, you know, really the defining shot of his career. You know, this encapsulates, as it were, his filmmaking. And I think that points to an abiding interest that Spielberg had, especially in his earlier movies, with, you know, showing, as it were, the kind of transformative power of connection, you know, of sort of reaching across, you know, the sort of the distance, even if this is somewhat painful, and making connection out there, and the experience of being human, a vulnerable human in the world, you know, yet still sort of striving for the good. And that really, I think, he crystallizes in Close Encounters and E.T., perhaps more powerfully than in any of his other movies. It's there. It's, you know, it's even there in Jaws. You know, in some sense, Jaws, you know, you have a, you know, people who are making contact with something which is bigger and more primal and more frightening, you know, than they might want. But there's still a kind of a grandeur and a power to the experience that, you know, is profoundly transformative. And so there's a wonderful shot in Jaws where they're out on the water at night, they're dealing with the shark, they're being basically hunted by the shark, and you look up at the sky and you see a shooting star whoosh, whiz across the sky. And so Spielberg pauses for a moment, as it were, to just kind of reflect on the beauty and the sublimity of the world in which we live, even that one that contains fierce and terrible things. And so it almost feels like a moment out of the Book of Job or something, where, you know, Job is just realizing he's a very small person in a very wide world. And that is something that Spielberg does through his two early Alien movies, I think almost better than any other filmmakers, to capture that experience of being small and vulnerable, but surrounded by immense beauties and terrors.
Specifically in those two films, Close Encounters and Of the Third Kind and E.T., some of the protagonists are little kids, and that also is true of some other films that he's done, whether they're historical films or just fun kind of buddy type of films. What is the significance of making the alien contact between kids? And I think that's also true of his later film that aliens are involved in, which is called AI, which is an extremely unsettling film if no one's ever seen that film.
His first, you know, three movies dealing with aliens all center around the experiences of children or people who are somewhat childlike. And I should have said before, you know, the, you know, though a bit old, I mean, the Close Encounters and E.T. were, of course, immensely successful. They're big, important movies. And so I think it's actually kind of nice to, you know, sort of take a moment to revisit them and draw them back to the to people's attention, especially when we're in an age where, you know, I think people are really looking for good, you know, wholesome and, you know, excellent entertainment. There's a lot of access to it. These are good movies to go back to. But, you know, children in, especially in Spielberg's early work are, you know, are very important, you know, and that's a, he himself, you know, experienced some, you know, real kind of difficulties in childhood. He grew up Jewish in a primarily, you know, Protestant neighborhood and felt, you know, somewhat alienated, but, you know, through his filmmaking kind of discovered his special thing, you know, his superpower. His parents divorced, you know, and that kind of brokenness, you know, is something that he returns to again and again. And so he seems quite in touch, as it were, with the experience of being a child. And it is, you know, as far as I can tell, one of the best directors of children. He seemed to, you know, have been, even before he was a father, just have a, you know, just a real intuitive and powerful ability to connect with his child actors. And so, you know, E.T. is, you know, he just bonded with those kids, you know, so much, you know, that he said later, this is why he wanted to have so many kids, because he loved being, as it were, a dad on the set of E.T. He's able to kind of get down, as it were, into the heart of what it's like to be a child, which in some sense is just what it's like to be kind of a vulnerable person who's exploring the world with wonder, but also with, you know, caution. And so the, and that connects, you know, to all of us. We were all kids at one point, and that's part of why his films are so, so immensely successful, is because he's able to tap into that experience. And the, you know, the reason why I think children and aliens, you know, pair so well is partly because, you know, Spielberg wants to, as it were, evoke situations where we have people who don't have any other sort of social inhibitions, or, you know, they don't have any other responsibilities that interfere. They're more able to just have this direct, you know, even if strange, experience, which is profoundly transformative with some sort of, with someone who is profoundly different than they are. And so, you know, he's going to use children in order to carry out that effect in those first two films. AI is a little bit of a different story. It was originally, of course, Kubrick's project, which Spielberg took over. And there's a bizarre kind of tonal clash, as it were, between Kubrick's perhaps darker, more astringent, you know, cinematic sensibilities, and Spielberg's, you know, more wholehearted and humane approach. And so you get this, you know, bizarre mix of, you know, Freudian themes with this young robot who's basically kind of given emotions, who desires to, you know, be with his mother, and, you know, but who's sent on this long journey and desires to reconnect. And in the end, some aliens appear and grant him his wish, his ability to be with his mother again. And so it's a movie that's simultaneously kind of moving, but also creepy. And so I think it's an interesting work for Spielberg to undertake. Definitely feels like something he would have made, but perhaps not in his sweet spot, as it were.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast. From the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal, today's guest is Dr. Phil Tallon, and he has written an exclusive online feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called Clear Skies, Hurt Hearts Can't Lose, Why Spielberg's Aliens Help Make Us More Human. And you can read it free online at our website, equip.org. And at our website, I'd also like to invite you to subscribe to our journal. A subscription is $33.50. And when you subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, you join this team of print subscribers, and the paid subscriptions to our magazine help provide all the free resources to minister to people worldwide who come to our website seeking to be equipped. And unlike a majority of websites, you'll notice that our website is not under a paywall. All of our thousands of articles, audio, and podcasts, and the Bible Answer Man broadcast and videos are completely free to anyone who visits our website. And so in order to keep making our website free and providing you this podcast and all these free online resources like this article, we'd like you to subscribe to the journal. Now, maybe a subscription is not in your budget this month, so I'd like to invite you to give us a tip. You can tip us like maybe $3, $5, or $10, the cost for some people of a monthly streaming subscription fee, or even somebody's favorite latte or coffee drink or lunch out. So you can do that by going to our website, equip.org, going to the link for magazine, and if on that drop-down menu, you'll see Postmodern Realities Podcast, and if you go there to the landing page, you'll find this episode on Steven Spielberg's films. Click that, and you can see a link there to the article, as well as other episodes and articles by Dr. Phil Tallon, and an opportunity to provide us a tip. And thank you so much for helping to keep all of our content free and for supporting the Christian Research Institute. We've been talking about the significance of aliens in Steven Spielberg's filmmaking career. And why do you think that Spielberg in particular is so interested in aliens?
It's a great question. He's of course said at various times that he believes in aliens. And the statements on this are a little bit funny, in that he sometimes it's unclear whether he just says he believes in them, kind of like, you know, he believes in what they mean. But other times he's gone out and said, you know, he believes that we're not alone in the universe. And so, you know, in that, you know, in some sense, I think he shares interest with a lot of people, especially people growing up during the Cold War era, who were very aware of government secrecy, strange things happening they knew that they, you know, weren't being told about. And some, you know, that includes, of course, you know, the experience of UFOs, you know, the possibility of a crashed alien spaceship that's being hidden away at Area 51 or some such place as that. And so he has some of that same interest, I think, partly because Spielberg is just intuitively, I think, just very good at kind of thinking along, as it were, with the American people. This is why he's just such an effective filmmaker. And so he kind of senses, his little antenna sense, you know, where, you know, what sort of things people are interested in. But his, you know, that dynamic of kind of government secrecy does play into one of his recurring obsessions, which is for Spielberg, you know, almost always in his early movies, authority and governmental structures, or, you know, the military or whatever, they're not necessarily the bad guys, but they're never the ones that are going to be able to, you know, really get the job done. You know, it's only the kind of the average person or someone who's connected as a much more to nature or to the emotional world that's going to be able to, you know, accomplish something. So Spielberg's got this kind of a little bit of a government suspicion built into his, especially his early movies. And then you see this running throughout some of his other later films, but it's a little bit less prominent. So I think he likes the sort of all the dynamics that, you know, alien stuff invokes. And also, I think he just really is intuitively tuned to find, as it were, these kind of big and strange metaphorical focuses, you know, that enable us to then kind of like have a wondrous experience. And so, you know, for most of his major films, his huge blockbuster movies, center around, you know, regular people or very identified people, you know, encountering something which is strange and wondrous, something we haven't seen before. So you're going to see aliens maybe we haven't seen before. You're going to see some incredible special effect, dinosaurs, more beautifully presented on screen than ever before. Don't we all want to see dinosaurs? Every kid does, you know, that sort of thing. And so he's able to create something which is both compelling cinema, by presenting us with a vision that, you know, we haven't encountered before, but which also then kind of awakens, as it were, our imagination and kind of puts us in this fresh childlike space where we're seeing something almost like we would for the first time when we were a kid.
Well, I think every kid wants to see dinosaurs, but Jurassic Park is a whole nother ball game because those dinosaurs are not cute. They're pretty scary. But,
some of them are cute.
You know, his films did change over time. So how does, in terms of the aliens, right? So how does Spielberg's handling of aliens change during his career? Because at the beginning, you have, like we were talking about, you know, E.T. and before that, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And then, you know, more in the 2000s, so the 21st century, he does War of the Worlds. So, you know, and we talked about AI a little bit, which just had this odd alien thing at the end because that wasn't the focus of the film, but that was in the 21st century. So, you know, how is his view of aliens or the coverage of ways he wants us to think about aliens changing over the course of his career? And I will say for anyone that's younger, that's never seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind, for sure you need to look up online just the famous score, because it had this just these few notes that were supposed to identify with the aliens. And it just at that time became really famous. Just those, you know, you'd hear those few notes and everybody knew that it was from Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh yeah, the five tones. Yeah, well, that's you know, such a powerful cinematic evocation of, you know, sort of reducing everything to total simplicity. So if you have no other way to communicate with someone, how are you going to do it? Okay, you can do it through the power of music. And because there's beauty, you know, to these five tones, you know that there's some sort of benevolent intelligence behind this communication. That's a incredible cinema. But you're asking about the change of from early to late, and you know, I think that partly the change can be attributed to just Spielberg kind of tapped, as it were, his original, you know, cinematic interests. And later on, if you're going to, you know, you have to do something different. And so I think his later stuff about aliens is less personal. So, you know, with AI, he's basically taking on somebody else's project. And then War of the Worlds, which is, based on an H.G. Wells novel, been adapted many times. And then Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which is basically George Lucas's idea, because he and Spielberg worked together on the Indiana Jones movies. It was originally Lucas's idea. And it's basically the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull has the aliens are sort of the ancient aliens from, you know, fairly old book, Chariots of the Gods. The idea has been around for a while that, you know, ancient civilizations were seeded or planted or created by aliens. Not any good evidence for this. It's kind of a crackpot theory, but it's seeped into the popular culture, and so Indiana Jones kind of picks it up, and that's what the aliens are in there. They're these ancient creatures that don't do terribly much in the film. War of the Worlds, though, is the movie that I think has the most interesting shift in tone. You've got the story is that, you know, basically aliens emerge. They're essentially kind of annihilating and harvesting people, you know, for the purposes of terraforming and taking over our globe. They're purely malevolent. There's really no redeeming value in the encounter. And the relationships of the family, the central family, follow Tom Cruise and his two kids are very much Spielbergian. You know, they've got this kind of troubled, you know, sort of difficult relationship, but Cruise is really the center of focus more than the children. And Cruise is more of a difficult parent. You know, he's less invested in his children's lives. You know, frequently he has these kind of outbursts of anger. He has more difficulty connecting, but he's a tough guy, right? He's a manual laborer. And so he's more difficult to identify with throughout the film, much more difficult than, say, Elliot and E.T. But then this kind of carries over into the movie's theme and point, which is, spoilers, that, you know, at the end of the movie, the aliens begin to die because they're being exposed to human bacteria. And there's a closing voiceover, a kind of theodicy almost, that's presented that, you know, explains that the aliens are suffering from this bacteria that we humans have, you know, dealt with for, you know, thousands of years and have grown resistant to, and, you know, we've basically already fought, as it were, our war against this bacteria and won and overcome it. And because of our toughness, you know, we therefore prevail over the aliens who are have been unexposed to this bacteria. So there's a nice little comparison there between, as it were, the kind of toughness of Tom Cruise's character. You know, he's kind of hard, you know, tough skinned and, you know, a bit kind of gruff, but he is, as it were, a representative human. You know, we may not be perfect, but we're tough. As opposed to Elliot, who's this tender hearted kid, you know, who just wants kind of connection. So there's a shift there a bit. But also, you know, War of the Worlds is a much lesser film, right? It's much less close to what I think Spielberg really wants to do in his movies, which is to have these exciting, big concepts, you know, with a, you know, plot that just, you know, tears along at a great speed, but also have real human relationships and, you know, very kind of observational, you know, lives these people are leading. And War of the Worlds is just much less about the relationships and the kind of the, I don't know, these tender moments as a result of the way that it approaches its story. So there's a bit of a shift there. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, widely derided as one of the worst Indiana Jones movies. I actually don't think it's all that bad. It's got a lot of really wonderful set pieces. I think anybody who watches it would enjoy it. And it doesn't take itself too seriously. And, you know, I think basically kind of Spielberg is to some degree making these movies just because he's looking around for something to do. Everybody likes Indiana Jones. Harrison Ford wants to make more Indiana Jones, and so why not?
I sure hope Harrison Ford is up for some physical, you know, stuff when he's going to make it at his age, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, then they're making another one, so he's
yeah, very... Yep. Well, I guess so. I guess he does a lot of things like that. I know he flies planes and so forth. But I do want to tell our listeners, since Phil mentioned Ancient Aliens, that if you haven't already heard episode 110, we cover Ancient Aliens and specifically the History Channel TV series. It's in its, I think, 13th season or more on Ancient Aliens. And then also, if anyone's interested, it's been a long time, several years, but we did do a podcast, episode 25, on the film Arrival, and that also has to do with aliens. So I recommend those two alien-related episodes to you. But I just wanted to, you know, as we've talked about Spielberg and his career, I think some people are thinking, well, why would I watch those as a Christian? What would be the point of watching these films? And so how can the Christian apologist use his films as a springboard to talk about Christianity or just to talk about themes that, you know, resonate with people that Christianity can address?
Yeah, well, that's something that I touch on in the piece a bit, which is that I do think that one of the, you know, an important part of, as it were, cultural apologetics is to, you know, identify bad ideas and, you know, sort of bad elements of works of art that, you know, we're going to mislead our minds or our hearts. But there's also so much value in just kind of using the arts as ways of opening people up to have a conversation or to talk or to sort of experience again something which is, you know, just kind of basic and important that we've maybe lost sight of. And I don't think there are many movies that are better than Close Encounters or E.T. for reawakening a kind of, you know, basic wonder and openness. Close Encounters, it feels more theological almost in its story, which is that it's about, you know, people who are connecting for the first time with some, you know, revelation from above. And so it, you know, the character almost feels like Abraham, Richard Dreyfuss's central character, in that he's given this, you know, this mission and this goal that he doesn't know how to comprehend, but he steps out in faith and he just has to, you know, kind of pursue this thing. And the audience is, you know, continually presented with things that are strange and uncomfortable and that, you know, can even be frightening, but where there's still like an underlying kind of beauty and majesty to what we're seeing. And so we're simultaneously made kind of afraid almost, but then drawn in. And this is the experience of the sublime, right? Which is, you know, essentially the experience of religious wonder, we encounter a great and powerful and beautiful and good God, we're both afraid. We're told to be afraid by Scripture, but then we also love God. So there's this element of kind of holy fear that's mixed with holy love when we encounter God. And Close Encounters just gives us, as it were, that experience, but through the metaphor of alien connection. And so I think it's a great way to, you know, if you're somebody loves this movie and, you know, having that conversation and saying, you know, like, yes, like this reminds me again what it felt like to, you know, in these moments of worship, or this reminds me of what it's like to, you know, encounter divine revelation. This tells the story just in a slanted way, as it were, to borrow from Emily Dickinson's phrase. So you get this kind of like backdoor way into talking about part of the experience of being a Christian. And likewise, E.T., I think, is just, it's a movie that is centered around compassion. You know, it's a movie that's almost painful in its, the degree to which it, you know, sort of elicits our, the way that it sort of draws us in and then kind of breaks our heart, right? And, you know, and I think that it's a powerful reminder just of the, you know, the way that love, you know, is transformative, but then also, you know, makes us deeply vulnerable. And so it's a good movie for, you know, exercising, as it were, that compassion muscle in us. And, you know, in my piece, I think I said, you know, we've grown very accustomed to watching stories of unrelenting violence, but we're often made uncomfortable watching stories now of unrelenting compassion. And so it's a good exercise to kind of work again that that muscle through the encounter with the arts, because of course, you know, this is what Christ calls us to take up our cross, to practice Christian love, which is a very vulnerable form of love. We give of ourselves and we expect nothing in return. We expect that our hearts will be broken in some sense as we give them away. And so I think it's a nice way into reminding us of the power of that.
Well, we talked a couple minutes ago about the five tones, and also if someone is younger and never watched E.T., you know, got to get going on watching E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. But back then it was like kind of the water cooler phrase of the time. There's this really famous line where it's E.T. phone home. So I would recommend that people discover that, you know, phrase, because that I remember speaking of compassion and all those kinds of things, that it was an affecting film just about his relationship with these kids. And then also, if anyone watches any current Spielberg films, they'll notice that his film company logo is one of the iconic scenes from E.T., which is a little boy has E.T. in his bike and they're cycling past the moon.
Yeah, they'd suddenly take flight, you know? Yeah, that's pure Spielberg right there.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Phil. So, Phil, what is your favorite Spielberg film, including all the ones not about aliens?
Well, it seems like I should say something besides Close Encounters of the Third Kind, since we've just talked about that. I will say that Raiders of the Lost Ark, it is the film of his that I have watched the most, perhaps more than any other film, and it's just a perfect movie. There, you know, it has it all. People on the internet have joked that, you know, the story could have unfolded with, exactly as it did without Indiana Jones being involved. The movie just flows. Indiana Jones is such a wonderful character. Of course, as an academic, you know, you kind of look to Indiana Jones as a bit of an ideal. And it has this very interesting, you know, religious element at the end where, you know, they open the Ark of the Covenant and sublime and terrible and destructive power that they should not have meddled with, pours forth. And Indiana Jones is only saved because he has enough wisdom, as it were, to kind of bow the knee and not to look. And that, I find it to be just sort of a perfect work of popular Hollywood cinema. And I, you know, I would say that is the, if you count favorite movies by movies you've watched the most, that's certainly my favorite of his.
Well, I also want to commend everyone, if they haven't already listened to it, that back on episode 123, Phil was on talking about a film about J.R.R. Tolkien. And so I also know that Phil went to the UK for vacation this summer. So bangers and mash or fish and chips?
Well, fish and chips, at least when you're in the UK, at a very good spot, because bangers and mash, I think just about anybody can do well, but you got to go to just the right place to get perfect fish and chips. There's a fish and chips place in Anstruther, Scotland, said to have the best fish and chips in the UK. We went there when we traveled over for the summer, and it was indeed extremely good. And so I'm a fish and chips man.
And I know that you took daughters to the UK, a couple of your kids. So did you have a proper British high tea?
You know, we had tea many times, you know, cream tea, you know, with a lot of kind of trimmings. We never made it though to kind of a full on high tea. We had plans on it, but it never really worked out. Instead, we were mostly just hiking around. And it also may have had something to do with the fact that we were doing so much camping and hiking that we never really looked very presentable. We were always a little bit sweaty and a little bit rumpled. And so I think we never quite wanted to go into a fancy place in order to have high tea.
Well, when I think of film and I think of the UK or England, I think of James Bond. So which actor is your favorite 007?
Oh, well, I think it would have to be Sean Connery. He's the first. And so he's the template for all of us. And so he's also in my favorite James Bond movie, which is Dr. No. But of course, I grew up with Roger Moore. And so that sort of sillier, lighter James Bond is the one that, you know, I was most accustomed to at first. And he's in some good James Bond movies as well. The Spy Who Loved Me is quite good. And even people talk about Daniel Craig as perhaps one of the best Bonds. And he certainly is excellent as well. I like Pierce Brosnan as well. Not a huge fan of George Lazenby or Timothy Dalton, though those movies are still very watchable.
And what about the royals? They all seem to find their way into the news, even over here. But who's your favorite royal?
I don't follow the royals terribly closely, but when I was at University of St. Andrews studying, Will and Kate were both there, and we just kind of see him around. And so I always, you know, felt a little extra proud of those two kids getting together. And, now they're off having lots of kids. So I suppose maybe their son, George, you know, I'm a fan of George just because I like, you know, seeing a couple get together and starting a family.
And finally, I'd like you to share, I think I saw somewhere on social media that you had kind of It's a Small World encounter while you were on vacation. Do you want to describe that, where you're driving by in the car and saw somebody that you knew?
Well, yeah, we bumped into so many people I knew over Americans that I knew. We were in Oxford and I ran into three different people, including a student from HBU who's just starting our master's in apologetics program that I'd never met before, but who identified me on the street. We're just sitting out there. And so you never know who you're going to run into. And then we were in Hawkshead Lake District, which is a fairly small little town, and ran into a friend who's a Trinitarian theologian, Fred Sanders from Biola University. Just saw him on the side of the road. And so we stopped and had a little conversation. And so my children think that I just know everybody because I ran into so many people that I knew while we were, you know, 7 hours time zones away. But I think it's mostly attributable to the fact that just American Christians just love England in the summertime and want to get over there and experience all things C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. And so there's just a lot of us over here, and it's a small country.
Well, thanks, Phil, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities Podcast.
Yeah, glad to be here.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. And I'd like to thank again today's guest, Dr. Phil Tallon, who has written a free online article for us. It's a website exclusive, and it's called Clear Skies, Hurt Hearts Can't Lose, Why Spielberg's Aliens Help Make Us More Human. You can read that completely free at our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media. Like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities Podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.